Good morning. I'd like to welcome everyone to this morning's study session of the May City Council for Thursday, October 28th, 2010. We'd like to excuse Councilmember Kavanaugh. He's out of town attending a conference and will not be with us this morning. So we'll move to the first.
Freudian slips are terrible.
They are, aren't they? The first item on the agenda.
Start over.
The agenda. This piece of paper right here is to hear presentation, discuss, and provide direction on consumers' use of fireworks within the city. Oh, wait. That's after we review the meeting. Would somebody please mark the time when I actually wake up this morning? Because it isn't right now. I know that. I apologize. I was rushing today. First item is to review the agenda for next Monday's council meeting. Okay.
No, I wish I would put that on here.
Items 3A through 3C, 3D through 4C, 4D through 4G.
Oh.
Councilmember Higgins?
I have a question on 4F.
4F.
There. Thank you.
Water lines.
In my district.
Yeah, we don't care about that. But the question was, wasn't there a bid problem? Or there was some discrepancy if someone was so much lower than somebody else and you were going back and forth? Can you just maybe share? Thank you.
Member Higgins. In the bidding process, the low bidder came in lower than the others. And there kind of is a point at which we look at the bids and we get concerned if there is a low bidder who's quite a bit lower than others. This low bidder was about $300,000 lower than the other bidders. We took a look at their bid. We couldn't see any significant problems with the bid. We met with them. We talked to them. We asked them to review their bid. The law does allow them, if they can show a mistake in their bid, to withdraw their bid without losing their bid bond. They went back through their numbers. They've indicated that they don't have any problems in their bids, and they can do the work for the low bid that they've presented.
Great. Thank you very much.
Okay. Anything else on 4D through 4G? Items 4H through 4J, 4K through 5E, and 5F through 6A. Councilman Richens.
I'd like to take 6A off consent agenda.
6A off consent, that's zoning case Z 10-26. It's council use permit.
Yep.
Okay.
Thanks.
Off consent. Okay. Anything up? Oops. 7A through 9. Okay. Now we go to the next item on the agenda, which is to hear a presentation, discuss, and to provide direction on consumers' use of fireworks within the city of Mesa.
Morning, Mayor, members
Morning,
of the council.
Morning, Chiefs.
As you recall, we were before you a couple of weeks ago with our first introduction to a plan for dealing with the use of fireworks in the city of Mesa as a result of the legislature passing a law that would allow the sale of fireworks throughout the state of Arizona. Obviously, this increases the risk in our communities. I think that it's something that was probably done maybe not with the full awareness of the level of risk that it does create. We're here to give a presentation this morning, but I'd like to reiterate our recommendation is that we prohibit the use of fireworks in the city of Mesa simply because of the level of risk, the increase in call volume, and quite simply the danger to either damaged property or injuring people. So with that, we have with us this morning Chief Stubbs, and Alfred's going to sit in with us. And I'll let Dan start the presentation.
Mayor, Council, good morning. I'm not going to go through the whole report because most of it is information you had on October 7th, but I'll give you the update, the highlight of the updates. The first thing is that there's been a few more jurisdictions that have passed ordinances since we've last met. So to date, we've got Goodyear, Tempe, Cave Creek, Salt River, and Carefree have all passed ordinances restricting the use of fireworks.
Chief, Councilmember Higgins?
Yes. That was kind of vague when I read that in the report. Does that mean they're restricting entirely no use, or they put restrictions on the use?
They're restricting the total use of fireworks in their...
So absolutely no fireworks usage at all in those municipalities?
The consumer fireworks. I mean, the public displays and things like that are still allowed, but the consumer fireworks are not allowed.
At all.
And to date, I mean, obviously there's a lot more jurisdictions in the Valley. Other jurisdictions are still working on this. There's been nobody to date has passed anything that has allowed the use of the fireworks that we're aware of. As Chief pointed out, our primary recommendation is that we uphold our current ordinance of restricting the use of consumer fireworks. Although we were asked to provide an alternative, which we've worked with several different groups from the city, and we've come up with an alternative that we'd like to discuss with you now. There's one thing that's not in here because it was kind of cumbersome to put in there, but Alfred's here to certainly answer any legal questions. The last time we were asked about the liability or assessment we could put on an individual if they did start a fire, or if using this fireworks, a fire spread to a business or something like that, what we as a city could do, and Alfred will provide that for you in a minute. The alternative we've got listed down here is, as we talked about, the hours and days of use. We came up with a 1 p.m. to 1 a.m. The 1 a.m. is primarily for New Year's Eve. I know our noise ordinance restricts it well before then, so we may have to do a little tweaking in that for the final ordinance if we do pass an alternative. But we figured if, you know, with New Year's Eve being midnight, the 1 a.m. was more practical there. And then we looked at New Year's Eve and the week of 4th of July. Those seem to be the target dates for fireworks. And then again, we require the use of adults, or require adult supervision, someone 18 years or older, during the use of fireworks. And we have an educational pamphlet that I'll talk about in a minute. Going on to the sales of the fireworks, we're recommending that when they're sold, they're limited to certain type of occupancies. Those that already have built-in fire sprinkler systems and alarm systems and things like that. That would be your bigger box retails or your big stores. Also working with zoning, we're looking at these businesses are already permitted. We're not looking at the non-permitted areas like tent sales on the roadways and different things like that. We're looking at established permitted businesses already if we're going to sell them.
So to clarify, you would not recommend the tent sales out in the parking lots or anything, you're recommending against that?
We're recommending against that.
Okay. Could I follow up on that? That seems to be, there seems to be an industry that has done that for years and years in other areas. So I'm curious as to why, if those are going to sell, why, if they've worked in other areas, why that wouldn't work here.
Well, I'd have to defer that to our zoning people. Gordon can come up and give you a better answer than I could on that. We talked about it in our meeting, but I'd mess it up.
Okay. Mayor, Council, the existing zoning ordinance prohibits the use of commercial districts and residential districts for any kind of temporary peddler types of transaction. It requires permanent improvements. It doesn't allow the temporary, for example, the guy who sells shrimp out of the back of his trunk, those kind of temporary peddler types of sales, they're not allowed to occur unless you're in an industrial district, the M1 or the M2 districts. And so it's similar, the similar type of thing would here, if they were to set up a temporary tent type of activity or try to sell, or like the roadside, the roses that you see sometimes on Valentine's Day, those types of things, those are not considered to be permitted activities again until it's in an industrial district. That was a policy that was, again, set up when the current zoning ordinance was established in 1988.
Okay, but we're assuming that we're going to change in the law.
Yeah, Gordon, I mean, let's go to Christmas. We got Christmas tree sales in parking lots all over the city. We've got Valentine's Day.
Right, there's the Christmas tree sales and the
Halloween
pumpkin sales
today.
Lot, those are exceptions.
Why?
Those, that's just what, that's the policy the council set.
Policy or the in the ordinance?
It's in the ordinance.
Okay, so how difficult would it be to make this an exception?
It wouldn't if that's the direction.
I just want to know where we stand from an ordinance standpoint.
No, but there would have to be an exception created.
Right. In the ordinance.
Yes.
And I'm assuming that if we went that route, there are other cities who have had literally decades of experience. I'm assuming there's a body of knowledge out there that defines standards and things like that, if that were an option that we were to
Yeah, no, there would be certain...
Yeah, we're not going alone on this. This has been done for many years in many different places.
No, you were not creating...
And I'm assuming the industry probably even...
We're not reinventing the wheel.
Okay. Councilman Fenter.
No, that was a good
thing. Okay. All right.
Okay.
Other...
No, I'm not.
No, okay. Go on.
I'll move on with item two under the sales of consumer fireworks. As we talked about the last time, requiring some signage and posted and some safety sheets. We're recommending that if we do an alternative, that we have some signs posted about adult supervision at all sales, and that the retailers are required to hand out safety sheets for each transaction that they get, that our fire marshal will provide the information on that the consumers will get. The penalties for any kind of violation of the ordinance, we had two choices. I mean, there's a criminal and there's a civil, and we're recommending the civil route on this if there's any kind of violations. And then as an alternative, where there was some discussion about the possibility that staff could explore having an industry representative or somebody sponsor use of sites and fireworks, like the city could set aside a site like a park or Hohokam or something like that, and the industry would sponsor the paramedics or whatever needed to be on standby or fire department or whatever to allow citizens to use these consumer fireworks at this location. That's another alternative we can look at as well. So that's the alternative we came up with. Again, the only thing that we don't have in here that I've got Alfred can speak on that is the liability issue.
Councilman Richardson's question.
A question about this criminal penalties or this penalty section. What's the existing ordinance? Say people could acquire these and a fire occurred because of them. What are the penalties there? Those wouldn't be just civil penalties. Would those be criminal damage type? Or
Mayor, Councilmember Richardson.
The current ordinance prohibits the sale and use of fireworks. So if there were to be an existing fire under either one of these ordinances and it were to damage property, it would be no different than an arson fire, things like that. We would look to make the culpable party responsible for any damage that would occur because of the use of those fireworks.
So if we change this to allow the use, how do we have to respond in our criminal code, or do we?
Well, it currently it wouldn't be set up as a criminal matter. It would be a civil matter. So we would have to look to recoup the costs of the fire suppression and things of that nature that we would have to go out there to try to entertain. If there was an actual criminal act, I guess from an arson perspective, I would defer to the fire department how they would handle that. But those could potentially be criminal liabilities as well.
Can we back up just a bit? What is our current penalty for using fireworks in the city?
That I'm not aware of, Mayor. I'm not sure.
I'm assuming it's a civil offense.
I believe it's a class one misdemeanor, but
okay.
I'd have to check on
so
that.
So it's a criminal offense?
That's a criminal offense, yes.
So what you're saying is that you would lessen this to make it a civil offense rather than a criminal
Correct.
Offense?
Correct. And that has to do with the burden of proof of being able to find witnesses, because the difference between a criminal and a civil penalty has, as you probably, Mayor, well knows, it's a much tougher burden from a criminal matter. So the intent was to try to get a civil citation here so that we could, in essence, try to prevent the activity from occurring in the future without having to go through the criminal route and establishing.
Let me ask you this. When was the last time we prosecuted someone under in the city for fireworks use? Because I know it goes on a lot. And I mean, we're talking boom, boom type things. That's a technical term, by the way.
Chicka, chicka, boom, boom.
Quite some time,
Mayor.
Oh, no.
Well, You know, what would be interesting is we don't have anyone from the police department up here, because... Oh, there's Chief. I don't mean to catch you off guard, Chief, but, you know, police department, I guess what we have is the police department deals with the offense. The fire department deals with if things go wrong. You guys are going to have to be out enforcing this thing. You do right now, or...
Mayor, Council.
What's your...
I don't have the numbers of how many times, but we do confiscate fireworks. We do... It is a Class 1 misdemeanor cited into city court. So it
basically,
does,
right now, generally you confiscate rather than...
No, we would also write a citation also.
But we don't know that actually goes on. I mean, I know that's what the law says, but let's be realistic. This happens all the time, and I'm not sure that... And this isn't a criticism, by the way. It's just an observation, because I'm trying to figure out how we're changing from our current situation to what might exist if we go this route.
Mayor, one bit of information we were able to collect is that over the last 5 years, we've had over $500,000, over $500,000 of property loss attributed to fireworks.
In how many incidences?
I don't have that number. All I know is that over the last 5 years, there's been $500,000 worth of property loss as a result of fireworks.
Okay. I'm not arguing with you. Just how many from cooking oil and gasoline? My guess is gasoline, you probably have as much, if not more than that.
Well, it's because they're illegal now. I mean, cooking oil is legal. So that gets used a lot
not
more.
My house is not.
That gets used a lot more than an illegal firework.
You know, whenever we throw statistics out, I want to put it in perspective.
No, but that's you're making apples and oranges, though. They don't seem like those two, you know, comparing
well,
a legal
gasoline,
thing
storage,
that people use.
Storage gasoline on site is not legal in an illegal. I'm stretching now.
Yeah, that's okay. Go for it.
Councilmember Higgins.
I want to help you out here. Only,
thank you.
You're welcome.
Obviously, I need it.
Well, currently, illegal fireworks, people want to hide, so they go places where maybe they're not seen. So, you know, out in the county islands, this is an issue, right? People go out to where we're not under some jurisdiction that will find you easier. So, you know, actual allowing the use of fireworks in areas, maybe just residential property or somewhere where you're in your own yard, which means you probably have access to water, and you're not hiding out at Ellsworth and, I don't know, pick a street, would actually be safer. Is it possible some of that money loss was because they were somewhere where they didn't have access to water, or, you know, kids out in the desert trying to hide from whoever because it is illegal currently? And perhaps the, you know, actually allowing some areas where you could use it, but not, no offense, I don't like the one recommendation where was it? No. The area from, you know, are we in recommendation or is this still question?
No, I'm just
trying. Can we just talk?
What I'd like to, I'm not trying to create conference. I'm just trying to understand how we're transitioning from what is currently. Currently, all fireworks are illegal and it's a Class 1 misdemeanor. It's a criminal offense. Okay, right? If we, any of these recommendations, we're still talking about the explosive, you know, things that were not legalized are still going to be illegal, right? Prohibited. And what I'm understanding is that your recommendation is that we move that from a Class 1 misdemeanor down to a civil offense, or correct? And one of the ideas is that it makes it easier for the police officers actually to enforce that, since they don't have to get witness, they can issue a citation. Is that accurate? Is it easier for the police officer on the street, if they're faced with that situation, does it create an easier enforcement effort, or does it matter?
It would not make it easier. We would still have to write a citation, whether
right.
It's civil or criminal. I think what they're talking about here is it would be easier to prove.
To prosecute.
Prosecute.
I guess that's what I was meaning. It's an easier prosecution because of the civil offense. The officer can just write it.
Correct.
Okay. So what we're saying, the change, just in a general basis, what we're talking about is explosive fireworks would still be illegal regardless, because those were not legalized under the state law.
Right.
The non-explosive, if you went outside the parameters that are set here, those would also be illegal, and they would be subject to this civil offense. Am I summarizing this correct? Is what you're saying? Well, you have the sale and you have the use of consumer fireworks as an alternative. So if we adopted one of your alternatives, within those authorized uses, as long as you follow, everything's cool with the, what do they call them, the safe and sane, I think I got something for you, safe and sane fireworks, the non-explosive types. Anything outside would still be this civil offense, which would be equal to what the explosives would be. Am I understanding that correctly?
I believe you are. We can make it whatever level of offense that, that the council...
Well, I'm just going by what you proposed here.
Right.
I just want to understand what you're proposing.
This alternative, if we were to go this route,
okay,
would encourage us to make this a civil violation rather than a
okay.
criminal.
That's what I want to understand.
Yeah.
Councilmember Summers.
Chief, isn't that the direction we took with the noise ordinance when we changed it? Was that not a misdemeanor before turned civil?
Correct.
When we did the adopt... You worked on that, Vice Mayor.
Yeah.
So... And that was in order to make it,
what, the same thing with the behavior process.
And the livestock ordinance did the same thing. We just we're switching things out of the criminal code into the civil code because they're easier to deal with. They're quite frankly probably more appropriate to deal with as a civil violation rather than a criminal violation.
Mayor, Councilmember Summers, that's correct. We modeled it after that to try to take it out of the criminal realm and make it, as Chief Meza indicated, easier prosecution offense. The parameters and specifics that police still have to deal with are the same. It's just from a prosecution standpoint, it makes it easier to be a civil.
Yeah, violent. And I may have started something by using the word easier. That's I think I like the word more appropriate. Because easier makes it sound like we're trying to get at people, and we're not. It's just it is more appropriate. It's less cumbersome,
and it
helps us get to the meat of the matter.
That's correct.
Yeah, and I'm glad to do that. I had two sips of coffee, so I'm starting to fire a little bit.
That's
better.
A better term.
On the other issue, Mayor.
Go ahead.
Although I'm going to need another sip of coffee to get firing on this one now because I got sidetracked a little bit. I think what has changed here, because the question was asked, what has changed? And what has changed is that up until this last legislature and December 1st being the action date, fireworks were illegal for sale and use in Arizona, so they were not easily accessible. Doesn't mean people didn't get a hold of them. Every 4th of July, people bring a bag full of fireworks from Mexico or New Mexico or California into fire stations. I hear them popping off as well. PD goes around writing violations. But the fact that we've only had, and I say only had, $500,000 in damage over the last 5 years, that we've had a limited number of fireworks injuries in the state is very much because they were not readily available in this state. Unfortunately, there's nothing we can do to change that. They're going to be available. What has changed is the economics. We will see, whether we allow their use in Mesa or not, we are going to see an increase in injuries. We are going to see an increase in fire loss and property damage. But potentially, given what's written in this law, and maybe you can attest to that, is that Mesa and cities could be on the hook to the state forester and the federal government for repaying for the cost of some of the fire suppression that comes as a result of this. It's in the law. I read it yesterday. I did a... And it's the fire that's really the greatest concern to me. It happens at East Mesa. There's a significant fire risk where it comes to state and federal lands in the wildland-urban interface. West Mesa is at risk for what happened in Scottsdale, which is lighting off with kids with sparklers. In the back alley, lit off some oleanders, destroyed one house, significantly damaged a second, and killed a family dog. I did a search of the fire risk in Arizona. I looked up on the FEMA website. It tells you the last disasters that were declared or states of emergency that were declared in Arizona. 41 of the last 50 over the last 20 years, there were 50. 41 of them were for wildfires. This state is flammable, particularly in the months of June, July, and August, where all the vast majority of the fires happen. My fear, again, is that we get a fire in the state lands in East Mesa, either started in Mesa, spreading to state lands, or starting in state lands and spreading to Mesa.
and we'll have a significant fire risk. I fought these fires before. I was on the Rio fire, if you remember that, back in 1995, which I can't remember the cause. I thought lightning. It was, one was lightning. I thought the other might have been a campfire was the other one.
I remember that one because I was actually flying in on the plane and saw it start, believe it or not.
I was on the ground in a far less comfortable position. All I remember is standing on a road in front of a wood building, being asked to defend it, and all I could see from left to right was a wall of fire coming through the mesquite, thinking, what am I doing here with a one-inch hose? This is not a good position for me to be in. And we're going to be putting some folks in the position. It's the fire issue that concerns me the most on this, and the fact that we could be on the hook for some of those fire suppression
costs. Could you expand on that? How would we be on, because I'm not familiar with this, how could we be on the hook?
The statute, Mayor, Councilmember Summers, provides that the state forester may, and again, I emphasize may, bill back the cities for any fire risk, any wildland fires that occur within our jurisdiction.
For what's the cost? By doing what?
For fire suppression, for putting out...
I know, but by... I'm not making... So if the cities allow this, the use of fireworks, what, you say they may bill. In what instance? What situation?
I guess at any time that the state has to go out there and participate and expend funds in order to put out these fires or to take...
Is that in any situation?
It says any situation. It doesn't define it in the statute as far as...
Okay, so if there's a fire that a wildfire that happens within our city limits, whatever the cause, the state forester can come back on the city to bill them?
If it's attributable to, and it's determined it's attributable to use of fireworks.
Well, but that's what I was asking.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
So you're telling me the state statute which authorized the sale of fireworks now puts a responsibility for the use of fireworks back on city.
That's correct.
Okay,
but
Councilman Reagan.
Just on that quick question, how often does the state come into our jurisdiction to put out a fire within the city limits? Because that's what you're saying, right? The state's going to come in to put out a fire in our jurisdiction.
No, I may have misspoken. What happens is, let's say, for instance, there's the sale and use of fireworks within our jurisdiction, and it spreads into county islands or even state lands if it extends that far. If it's attributable to an individual who had purchased fireworks in our jurisdiction and used them in our jurisdiction.
Is it say use them or if they purchased them?
It doesn't define that.
Well, so we're on the hook no matter what because state law allows the sale.
Yeah. Potentially, yes.
Well, not potentially. That's what the law says.
Well, again, it's because it's unclear.
I'm trying to differentiate between, because I'm trying to keep straight what we're going to do when we have the state who has authorized the sale. And what you're telling me is the state has authorized the sale, so we can't change that. We can restrict it.
Correct.
But we can't prohibit the sale of fireworks within our city. So if somebody buys fireworks, regardless of what we do, we're still potentially on the hook for a fire that someone may cause. Even if they buy it in Mesa, walk across the street and use it, we're still potential because they bought it in Mesa.
That's a possibility.
All right. So regardless of what we do in here, it doesn't change that liability is what I'm trying to get at. Except for, obviously, if people are using it, you could argue that it increases the potential of an occurrence happening.
That's correct, Mayor. I mean, okay. The reading of it is that it would put Mesa on the hook for, again, potentially, because it doesn't require us to come back and pay those fees. It's if the state forward.
Please understand, I'm not arguing one side or the other on this. Yeah. I'm just trying to understand what the law says.
Correct.
And it appears to me that regardless of what we do here, that position, that section of law, since we can't restrict the sale of fireworks, would still apply.
Correct.
Okay. Councilmember Higgins.
Thank you, Mayor. In general, we're talking safe and sane fireworks. I've heard a verbal description. Do you guys have anything to specifically show what we're talking about? Or did you guys cover it in the last presentation, which I was absent for? Chief, do you have anything that...
Well, we have witnessed some demonstrations provided by the vendors where we did take some visual recordings of that, as well as their presentation. I'm not sure if anybody here would has that, or if it was time to see it today or not. But
how long would that be?
Well, here's the deal. We know that sparklers and things that burn can burn.
But are we...
Isn't that a given? We get it that if things burn hot, they can burn things, they can burn people. I mean, isn't that a given?
Is it a big spray, little spray? Are we...
Sparkler.
No, yes. It's the things that sit on the ground.
And the things that go up.
That shoot up.
We have so, I mean, if I was in my confines of my backyard, blowing off fire, my sparklers, no, would it...
Can't blow up anything.
No, I'm sorry. Lighting.
That's a big difference.
Yes, I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah. Is there a potential for me in my backyard catching someone else's house on fire? Or is it safe to be used in a confines of a backyard? Or is it such a big spray that it could catch the whole neighborhood on fire?
Well, from what we witnessed during a demonstration, they have a device they call a fountain. And it spews, it's probably the equivalent of 50 or 60 sparklers, maybe more. And it spews sparks up about, the device is about 3 feet tall. It spews sparks up about an additional 3 to 4 feet. And they, if there's no wind, when they come down, there's a radius of about 6 feet. So that's sort of the hazard area, if you will, for that particular device. And that's if they only use one. And I think that's another concern we haven't discussed much is that we do have minimal risk with fireworks today since they are illegal, but they are still used within the city. Once this becomes something that's acceptable, there's no limit to the number of sparklers or the types of sparkling devices that can be designed and used. And I guess that just magnifies the risk even further.
But still, we're talking something that if, you know, what's the smallest zoning district we have in Mesa if you were in your property?
You're in your apartment.
In your apartment. I'm talking at 100-foot deep lots, 80 feet wide. So, I mean, if I was playing with this big, huge fountain in my backyard, with a 6-foot radius, the risk is minimal that it's jumping into Dave's backyard and John's or anybody else's. If there's no wind. Yes, perfect world.
If you're asking if we can legislate against stupid.
Yeah. But we're not.
If someone goes out in a tight area and sets off a firework, I mean, that's beyond common sense. That's just stupid.
So typically, I'm saying the things we're talking about are not of the size that would take down a neighborhood if used responsibly. That's my question.
In a single family, you can have lots that are 3,000 or 4,000 square feet. And in a certain zoning categories, what would you say, PUD?
Yeah.
PADs, you can allow that, which is probably smaller than your house. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you take the size of that and then add in some junk in the backyard that might catch on fire, that's when you start getting, I don't even want to try to say the word conflagration.
This sponsored site thing, could you expand on that maybe a little bit as to what that might entail? Because this is an interesting concept. And I understand that I'm not personally familiar with it, but I've had other people tell me that there are other cities that have done these things, like, you know, an open area, a park, a big parking lot, something like that, where they actually invite people. And I think you mentioned it. But could you expand on that a little bit?
As Mayor, if I understand your question correctly, it's in that open space area we talked about, that reference to that.
In one of your alternatives, and you touched on it briefly in your presentation, you talk about creating open sites where actually either the industry or the city would not only allow, but we would almost, I don't want to use the word sponsor, but in a sense we would encourage, if they're going to use it within these safe zones, you might say, would set up something like on an open.
And Mayor, maybe I would be better to speak to that.
Okay.
That was the context that I came from in San Antonio, where they restricted fireworks with throughout the city, except for designated areas where they sparklers could be used. And they, I don't know, we had three or four of these areas that were designated around the city, where they were the only areas where you could go to shoot off the sparklers, and they would have. Typically, they would work with the industry to try to manage that area, whether through, you know, water, having water there on site or something like that, and having even porta potties. So there, that was just an option that I put out there. As you would obviously have to designate an area where it was large enough for people could come to. It would be safe area away from things that could be combustible.
Well, the fields next to, and I'm just throwing this out, the open fields next to Holcomb that are used for
right.
parking and
or even large parking areas.
Yeah, they don't have anything that's combustible. They don't. You could. It's a big old large or open area. It's close to wiring. Councilmember Summers.
Actually, Mayor, I like the direction that that was heading. If that's the way that we're going to go, adding back in the sponsor. I don't think the city should sponsor that. But if a private entity were to sponsor that and then take the risk, get permitted, and have the appropriate safety measures in place, much like what San Antonio did, I still don't condone it, but that would be a better direction to go than outright allowing them.
And that reminds me, I got an email late last night, and I don't think that she's here because I think she got the meeting time. Is Sarah Haas-Sparman here? Oh, Sarah, you are here. If I recall, Sarah represents somebody in the industry. I'm sorry. We'll give you a chance to talk just real quickly. But I think this was something that we predetermined public parks or that type of thing, the industry. Apparently, they have some history with it. Okay. So what we've got here is, let's set the stage. We cannot prohibit the sale of these fireworks in our city. We can define and restrict both the place and the time of sale, is my understanding. And we have a proposal here that we limit it to certain large occupancy types and that the time period is limited to sale. Let's talk about that first. Councilman Higgins?
Limited hours of use, not of sale. You just said sale. Did you mean sale or use?
Sale and use.
I think the proposal is just for sale.
Oh, okay. But I think we can also restrict the time of sale. I mean,
We're still looking into that, Mayor. I'm not clear that that's a viable option right now. We'd have to look into from a zoning perspective whether or not we could do that. There was some discussion about
the zoning issue or is it an ordinance issue?
Well, it's an ordinance, but from a standpoint of I think. Right now, what we were coming to you, Mayor, is we're trying to limit it to certain areas of town, say C2 and C3 zoning, but I'm not sure that.
On the sale, right?
Yeah.
But you haven't talked about the timing.
The timing of it, no.
Okay. I mean, can't we explore? If we're going to limit use, I would just soon test the waters and push the limits and say, if you're going to use it these times, we could restrict the sale to the times that fit with the use. I don't know why there's any other reason to allow a sale in March when there's nothing that would indicate a use there, but I have no problem with the sale around the 4th of July. I mean, if we're going to manage this, then I think we ought to manage it in a reasonable manner. That doesn't seem unreasonable to me. I don't know what the other council members think, but it doesn't seem unreasonable to me.
But are we talking about restricting it to just a couple times a year sale?
When are they used?
If they were illegal, maybe, you know, birthday parties, Sunday afternoon dinners, you know, could be lots of reasons you'd want to have people over. And
are dinners that fun or that
they
bad?
Are. They're that exciting.
We need sparklers.
We need sparklers. No, so, I mean, it could be any time. So that's, you know, just a question.
That's an interesting point.
Cultural yeah. that might be a translator. I don't know.
Yeah, big part. Birthday
parties. I hadn't thought of those.
Yeah. Sunday dinners. We have fun.
Well, that's maybe the balance we're going to look at.
Mayor, I think part of the discussion that occurred last time, maybe not here with the council, is that it was, since we were looking to limit it to certain times of the year, that the market itself would dictate that those items would not be for sale year-round if in fact, you could only use those on the 4th of July or New Year's Eve. So
like Christmas trees.
I'm sorry.
They don't sell Christmas trees in March.
Correct, and that's kind
really,
of.
Like, you've never been to dinner at the Hickens house in August. They have an incredible August dinner tree.
Now they can put sparklers on it.
Was that a nice party?
It was a great party.
So I think that was part of the discussion on our end and bringing this forward is that there was a limit to when they could be sold, but not necessarily the time that they could be sold.
Wait, there was a limit as to when they could be sold, but not the
time? I'm sorry, when they could be used. I'm sorry. I was using your terminology. When they could be used.
That's dangerous. If you start quoting me, we're in deep trouble.
4th of July and New Year's Eve is what we were proposing.
So I think what we're looking for here is a compromise. I mean, I get it that cultural and other types of things, and maybe it's a good place to start. to just pick some areas where we can see how it plays out and manage it.
State law question?
Yes.
Does the state law say you can prohibit when you sell these things, or can you sell them whenever? Because that's, I mean, I thought that's what it was saying, that they're now legal for sale.
They're legal for sale, that's correct.
And we have the ability to restrict when those things are sold in the city, and our other cities restricting when those things are sold, or does Tempe sell them in March and we do May and June and someone else do July and August? Or
Mayor, Councilmember Higgins, from the ordinances I've read, nobody else is nobody else is allowing for the use of them in their communities, but there's no indication in their ordinance that they are prohibiting any sale times or locations of that. It is strictly a blanket prohibition on use within their cities.
So for sale, 12 months out of the year?
Yes. According to the ordinances that we've read, they could occur 24/7.
And does the state, is this new state law, is that what it says? You can't prohibit the sale?
It does.
We're just talking sale now, not use, sale.
It just says you can prohibit, you cannot prohibit the sale of the approved fireworks within your
community. But you can regulate them.
You can regulate.
Regulate the use. So what we're saying is we can't designate.
Hold on.
No.
You can regulate the sale.
We are saying we can regulate the sale, much like we are saying that we are recommending that they be in certain.
I understand.
C2,
let's C3 go back. We can regulate the sale, but the state law doesn't include any specific things that define what the regulate is.
That's correct.
So we just can't prohibit the sale.
That's correct.
So you could say they're only available 2 weeks out of the year.
We would look into, yes, I think we would make an argument if that's where council wanted to go, to use the mayor's terminology, to push the envelope, so to speak.
But the other cities that have ordinances are not doing that. They're allowing 365 sale of these things, but they're restricting their use.
That's correct.
They're prohibiting their use.
Prohibiting their use.
And we're talking, based on some of these alternatives, we are exploring the idea of restricting use, but allowing it under certain restrictions.
So, but the sale too. If all the other jurisdictions are allowing sales 365, we are going to want to. We're suggesting that we're going to restrict the sale to certain times a year. That doesn't make sense to me.
Well, I think part of it has to do with how they're going to sell. I mean, I'm wondering. I have no idea how this is going to play out. It looks to me like the industry is looking for, like they do in other states, where they'll be seasonal. They'll be like the Christmas tree. That the industry would, my guess, prefer that they set up the roadside stands and sell during the 4th of July week and sell during the for New Year's Eve, and that would be it. That it'd be like a Christmas tree. Ms. Benner.
Mayor, Councilmember Higgins, I think if you look at the recommendations and the alternatives don't include a limit the sale to certain times of the year. I think what they're saying.
No, I included
right.
that.
Right. If that's what
I,
council I wants to do, we acknowledge that is taking a step beyond what other cities are doing.
Right.
But we can look into that and pursue it.
I just wanted to make sure I understood what we were saying.
Yeah. And what I would throw on the table is if we're going to create a window of potential use, I would have no problem matching the sales period to match those windows of potential use. Because I think then it becomes manageable. It recognizes the state law, we can't prohibit, but also recognizes the inherent danger. And allows us maybe to better manage it. I'm not sure, and I don't know, I'm just not sure that an unrestricted sale with a total restriction on use, I think it's a feel-good measure that other cities have taken for them. I have no belief that it's going to honestly restrict. If you're selling 365 and you're just telling them, it's prohibited, right now people just wink at the law. They ignore the law. So I think it's a measure for, it's not a measure that has any meat to it. And it doesn't accomplish our goal, which is if the state wants to allow this, we're going to allow it reluctantly, because of the inherent dangers that are involved, and we need to be able to manage it. And I also think that, why do we have to do what other cities do? Just because they did it doesn't mean it's right. They do something stupid, we do something stupid, let's do what's right for Mesa. And doing something right for Mesa may be to take the managed approach. And I guess that's why I threw that on the table. Councilmember Higgins.
Thanks. I just still don't see the benefit of restricting the sale around a certain time of year if all the other cities surrounding us sell it 365 days a year. That doesn't, I don't see how that helps us.
Mayor,
like if we go point by
Higgins,
point on this.
When staff worked on this, the only thing that we tied to that was that most businesses and manufacturers, or excuse me, not manufacturers, but businesses don't have the storage capacity or the desire to store these year-round. We figured that by limiting the use, the businesses themselves would limit the sales because they just won't store it. And so that's why we didn't include any days when we would sell, because we figured that would be self-regulating by the businesses.
Great. So we're not saying we want to limit the days we can sell these products because the market will limit itself.
That's when staff worked on this. That was our determination.
You can buy them online.
But you can't ship them.
Oh, really?
Well, you can, but I think it violates federal law to ship combustible items.
I don't know. I think
you can't. Yeah, but then again, I think there will be some stores, specialty stores, for example, for special events, birthdays, whatever. I think you'll find them available. The thing is that I look at our staff time too. I mean, if we can define a window, we can give people the right to enjoy these, which obviously the state legislature feels is an embedded right in the founding fathers. They use sparklers in Detroit, in Philadelphia. I'm really messing up this morning. They used them in Philadelphia in July, and it's an embedded right. They allowed us the sale of these. So we're never going to get a perfect solution. I would like maybe to, in deference to our staff, it'd be a lot easier, I think, if we restricted it from a enforcement standpoint, and certainly from a fire standpoint. It seems like you'd be better off from a staffing if you knew exactly when these things were going to be sold in our city, regardless of what they do in other cities, versus having to go around and try and find and make sure people are storing them correctly. I mean, am I wrong on that?
Mayor, that does seem to be logical.
Because, I would hate to use what we know is very vital. Mm-hmm. The mayor's logical. Richens is an absolute shock here. The mayor, please don't tell him he's logical. That's dangerous.
I see that you had pointy ears and you're going to move your hand a little Star Trek.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, though, trying to save your staff time, it would seem like if we, let's say the market doesn't do that. Let's say the market does sell these. Now we have a real risk. And it would seem like you'd have to use staff time year-round to go and make sure that these are being stored. Whereas if we restrict them to a certain period of time, we work with the industry to come up with some standards, and maybe the best idea is to let the market get them out of the stores onto some more controlled industry-type stands where we don't have storage issues, where we can do that, and then your resources can be used more in a more concentrated and well-defined effort. I mean, am I completely off base on that, or is that something that might work?
No, Mayor, and I think that we have a track record for that. Obviously, we have fireworks shows in Arizona.
Yeah.
I've been involved in situations where, because of the desire for those fireworks shows, that fire trucks drive the streets in the plume area where the fallout could occur to try to avoid fires. So I think that we have, as a community, shown a tremendous amount of response to this industry with regard to allowing these kinds of shows. I think where our concern at this point lies is putting them in the hands of people that are untrained and may or may not be even of an age to understand the dangers of these kinds of things, and that they could be used recklessly, understanding that there are some safe uses of it. We've done that in terms of permitting these shows, in terms of making sure the shooters are trained. If it turns out that we want to have a user festival the 4th of July in a parking lot somewhere where people can come use, they can buy them there and they can use them there, and the vendor will sponsor it. And if anybody gets hurt, it's on their dime. That's another approach. It's an expansion of our current system, as where we currently allow actually rather major fireworks shows. They're one of the reasons that the fire trucks patrol the neighborhoods, and it hasn't come up right now, but this is pretty much pure physics, is that Arizona has one of the lowest humidity rates. When we begin to evaluate the risk of fire season, you see the signs on the highways that say fire risk is moderate, high, extreme. A lot of that's calculated based on the dew point. And what that means is the amount of water there is in the air. Because in other places of the country where the humidity is higher, you can shoot fireworks all day long and they won't start a fire because all of the materials around there contain enough moisture in them that they won't rise to the point of combustion before the heat goes away. In Arizona, we don't have that situation. We have tinder dry material here. And so the potential for us to have, you know, fires is much greater. And I think that's one of the reasons that we've tried to be proactive with this industry to help them. Because we hate to kill celebrations. You know, it's not a very popular place to be, especially 4th of July and New Year's and things like that. You become the Grinch. But there's a serious issue in terms of how we manage those kinds of issues. And the fire service in general is very concerned about the legislature's action this year that allows the sale throughout the state of Arizona. And we're also concerned that the state and the counties are not taking any action on how these items are used in other areas of the state. But we feel that, you know, being a community where we have a higher concentration of population, we have people who are specifically responsible for managing their safety, that we take the kind of steps that we think are reasonable.
Let me ask you this: if you provide sort of a safe place, a place where people can go and they know they can go legally and do it, take their families, whatever, couldn't you argue that that would maybe dissuade people from using these illegally, knowing that they had a place to go? Whereas if you just completely prohibited them, it sort of takes them into the backyard where it increased the risk. I mean, couldn't you argue that if you set up something and you allow these in controlled areas where we can mitigate the risk, I think you can make an argument that that would actually lower the risk in other areas because people know they can go to a place, say, hey, let's jump in the car, let's go over to X Park. We know it's going to be safe. We'll set off our fountains. We'll go home and everyone will be happy. They won't do that in their backyard then. I mean, you're smiling. You're not buying it.
No, Mayor, sorry. I'm not.
Okay, and?
You know, again, I just think if you're at home, I would be entirely in favor of, you know, not allowing this on public property, not your retention basins, illegal school parks, any kind of public area, right? But definitely on your own residential property. I don't see the big issue.
You don't mind setting up the place, but because most people are part of it.
I just say, if we're going to allow the use of fireworks in the city, that you should be able to use them on your own private property, but none of these public places, like when the neighbors or kids are blowing them or have a fountain in the retention basin.
I'm talking about a controlled place, sponsored place.
Like a controlled
place. I say start off with your backyard and see what happens.
Okay, so you would say let people do it citywide. All right.
I'm starting to warm up to the idea of having it in a specific controlled place. And since Councilmember Kavanaugh is not here, I'm going to go ahead and suggest the northwest corner of Alma School and Southern that we go ahead and start there and then go from there.
Second.
That may be the best suggestion I've heard in 2.5 years. You did have your ears closed on that one, didn't you? Now, taking the first part of that, was there a serious statement in the controlled areas?
Yes. I'm starting to feel a little bit more comfortable that I do think we need to address the civil and criminal and make sure that we keep that clearly defined, that illegal fireworks are still in the criminal code and that people that wrongfully use the legal fireworks in Arizona would be subject to civil penalties. And so
okay, I see nods around. Okay, so we leave the ordinance, we leave the punishment as is for illegal fireworks, and that if they're legal fireworks that are used outside of whatever rules we adopt here, those would be civil.
Right, and I think you could probably find six areas. You have six council districts, maybe one per district, places that you could have a control.
Yes, and the only thing I would suggest is maybe it would be good to try to work with the industry on that idea, because maybe if you come to larger areas, you could do that. The only thing I would say to council is the concern I have right now is I like that idea, and we can work through it, is December 1st, the sale of fireworks becomes legal. So
Let's get on a roll here with the use.
No,
so
I know.
Let's go back to the sale.
If we can come up with, we'd have to come up before then and get something approved.
So let's finalize this because I think we're getting some agreement on the use of that. And
we
then
can
let's
certainly
go to the
sit
sale.
Down and come back with some proposed sites if that's what you're asking.
Well,
yes.
We're kind of out of time already. The effective date in an ordinance is 30 days after its adoption, isn't it?
Unless the council declares
an emergency.
Based on life safety issues. And
oh,
then
we
by
got that
the
covered.
Second,
okay.
Yes, and then it would take effect immediately.
That's, I forgot about
Councilor
that.
Fenter.
Well, I'm all for the designated areas in addition to, because I do think you have a point. Folks that are not comfortable, shake roof, something like that, would like to go maybe purchase.
Live in an apartment or small lot, any of that kind of stuff.
So whatever time frame we come up with throughout the city, but have those designated areas for folks that might feel more comfortable in a safe area. So,
in addition to,
not instead of. That's what I would propose.
Yeah, I'd do it instead of because
instead of.
Just keeping this. Maybe the first couple years we go this way,
well,
and then let's see how it goes.
I was thinking the other way. Go try the year.
Let's do this. I think we're about split down the middle. I have no idea how it's going to. So why don't you do it with the proposal as is, and we'll take a vote on it. I think that's how it's going to play out. The vote on the restricted area or the designated areas, I think there's pretty much unanimity on that. But on whether that's the only area or whether there would also be something that would allow use on private property, and I think that's where the divide is. About half the council supports it on private on personal residence, and seems like about half would not.
Well, what happens is these things get used in the middle of a residential street. Well,
that's where, not public, private property, right? That's a public
so
right
that would
way.
Be a violation.
That would be a violation right there. We talked.
Because, in California,
so,
that's where everybody went was they did it.
And
see,
that would
if
be a
you, if you take it off the public street and you put it onto the lot, then you're getting it closer to the house, which is makes it a little bit more scary. But the use thing, the restriction, we didn't address the zoning category, which these things could be sold in.
Well, we're talking about use right now. Then we'll go to sales.
Okay.
So
just make sure.
All right. So is that specific enough on the?
You want two different ordinances brought, so then the.
Well, then we have one ordinance with. This is going to be included, and then you'll have a clause that we can either adopt or not adopt.
Okay.
Okay, that would deal with use on personal residence.
I think we're going to have to bring two different ordinances just to avoid the reintroduction, but we'll
but
work that
be,
out there.
They're going to be
exactly the same,
but one's
except
have
one will have the additional.
And I'm assuming that one on personal property would include something that would restrict that any use that would be an inherent danger.
Sure.
You can figure out the actual wordsmithing on that. But for example, if someone's using a fountain underneath their patio. maybe we don't need to state the obvious, but I think we need to state the obvious, which would give us some umph if anyone ever did that. We could come back and get them for damaging other things. Okay, now let's go to Councilmember Vice Mayor Jones.
Hey, just one more clarification then on all this, because part of the discussion early on that was mentioned was liability and making sure responsible parties are covered. Whether or not we restrict the use of through ordinance, responsible party is still going to be held liable for the use that they do. You can't legislate stupid like we've talked about before. So whether we pass an ordinance or not limiting the use, if somebody uses it in an unsafe manner, whether we have an ordinance or not, they are still liable for what they do.
Can we put something in our ordinance? And I know that you get into tort law and people can sue for damages, but can we put something in our ordinance that states if they use it illegally or whatever, and they create damage, the city has the right to go back? I mean, I know it may be redundant or may even be, but at least it sends a message. Yeah.
Well, I think certainly we can include in there the cost to the city for the fire suppression.
Yeah.
The question is, can we, in the ordinance, put any other private property that is damaged?
But at least the city.
Sort of a
stupid sparkler law.
We have to respond and...
Yeah.
I have a question.
Any problem
on
that? Oh, you have.
Just so, are you saying that if I'm using a fountain in my backyard and
you catch something on fire,
and I call out Mesa Fire, I'm going to get charged for it?
We could go back on you.
That wouldn't be good either, because then now we're going to try to get our hoses out because it could be a $20,000 call out. And this is that thing where we're going to not call the police in a SEPTED thing. It's the same thing. I'm not calling the fire department because
if your house is on fire, you're not.
No, but with a little grass fire where you might say, you know, you wouldn't typically call Mesa Fire, but if I know that I'm going to have to pay for it, we're going to try to take care of it ourselves until it gets out of hand, and then we're going to call the fire. So I don't think that's a good idea at all, unless it's negligent, and maybe that's the word.
I'm trying to think of somebody sitting there, and there's a fire raging in their backyard, and they're going, let me see, do I section 3.2 of the ordinance says this. I don't think I'll call. I think it's, you know, it's going to happen or it's not going to happen.
Work for Metro, whether you...
You know,
I'm glad your microphone was off.
If we said along the lines of negligent use,
okay, well,
you know what I mean, like true, like we're in between two houses on a 5-foot setback.
Well, that's what we're getting at.
Well, right, but I want to make sure that it's not affecting the, you know, the real person that's safe, and then something disastrous happens.
Something that's shooting sparks way in the air. You know, it's like
that's why I think it's an easy designation.
but it's legal, so you're not being negligent.
Just
unless
because
you're,
it's legal doesn't mean it's smart.
Unless you're in that 5-foot setback.
Let me bring this to a head. I think what we're saying, and if I can understand what Councilmember Higgins is saying, Dave, is if somebody has a big backyard and out in the middle of it, they should be and they don't. They're not stupid, and they're safe. They should have the right to do that. If somebody moves it over next to the oleanders and puts it within this 6-foot circle, you know, that's stupid. And yeah, and even Dina would agree that they should be held responsible if they do something stupid, right? And you may want to use that exact wording in the ordinance if you do something stupid. I have no idea what level of legalese that rises to, but I used it in my law school exams, and I didn't do very well on the test. But I mean, would you agree with that, Dina?
You know, this is my only fear is that when something happens, a low-level fire that you think you can handle, you don't want to call the fire department because you don't want to get charged. Just like, you know, the SEPTED thing where we don't want to call because it's going to come against us and we're going to have to put in new cameras.
Yeah, but I think if a fire starts, you're not going to be thinking that. You're just going to.
Well, it depends. If it's a small fire and you think you can handle it,
of course,
you know, and then fires get out of hand quickly.
Why don't you go ahead,
correct?
Put something like that in there, and we'll deal with it. We both.
Mayor, just to be clear, so what you're saying is that if there is negligent actions as a result of you using the fireworks and there's a fire that's called.
And I'm not sure if negligent is the right word in a hazardous way. You know, if someone is out in the middle of a yard and it's 30 feet to the thing, that was a smart way. If someone puts a firework in a way where reasonable, maybe it's a reasonable man standard, reasonable man standard where you look at it and you say, you put that there and you were shocked when it caused a fire on that, then the city would have the right to go after costs. And it's just an enforcement tool.
I think that the term is negligent because that is the reasonable man standard, unless we want to turn it around and say if you use it in an unreasonable manner and it results in property damage, then the city can go after
it. Whatever wordsmithing you have, I was just trying to get the negligent, define it in a more understandable way. And I think people understand what a reasonable person would do. So, okay. Go ahead and include that in there and we can talk about that later. Now let's get to unless you have something on that.
It was just for the point of direction on the idea of limiting it to certain areas by district. I guess we can call that the San Antonio model. Are they going to have to be sponsored by an agency or private or the city going to do it, or how are we going to work that sponsorship?
Well, I don't know.
Why don't we write the ordinance that makes it available and gives us the option of doing that? And it doesn't have to be by district. It could be by, we could do three in the city if that works out.
Large regional.
I don't know
right now. I haven't really sat down and figured out what were areas that would work best. But
it at least allows
us to come back with some ideas. I was hoping this wouldn't necessarily be a huge burden on the city as a cost.
Right.
That could be.
Well, we're trading one cost for another, though. It's either a huge burden when people use it illegally. Right. We're trying to mitigate those costs.
The industry has sent us letters saying that they're willing to sponsor events, so let them sponsor the event.
We need to go have those conversations. I agree. Okay. And I think we just need to have those conversations.
All right, let's pursue that. Now let's get into the sale.
Mayor, I'm sorry. I missed that last point. I was taking notes on somewhere else. You said let's include it in the ordinance.
We were discussing negligence again. No, we weren't.
I've got that note.
Oh, okay.
In terms of the designated areas, how do you want it to?
We're going to specify not right now.
We're not.
Yeah, we're just going to open it up to come up with a framework of how that would work.
You already get the ordinance.
Okay.
And the ordinance may even give us the option of designating those. It doesn't require us, and we can set the rules and the places and working with industry and those kind of things. So we can decide. I would like to put it in so that if it doesn't work, we can immediately easily not do it. Okay. Now let's go to the sale real quickly.
Someone can do it.
Well, I mean, I'd like to throw it on the table. I have no problem with restricting the, I would throw two things out and see if everyone feels comfortable with this. That if we're going to restrict the use and can restrict the use or allow the use in certain instances, I have no problem restricting the sale to those times of year that are most prevalent, such as basically New Year's and 4th of July. And as a trade-off, working with the industry to come up with some standards where they can, we can move the sales into some controlled areas. I'm a little bit uncomfortable with even the big boxes saying if you set this thing up, the shelf space that somehow is okay, because they're not fireworks specialists. And I feel more comfortable if we work with the industry to even set up booths. You know, now the onus is on them. They've had experience. They know how to do it. They can train people. They can control that. I feel more comfortable with that. And I think, based on what I've heard from the industry, that they would prefer to have specified periods of sale, because that's when they sell most of their fireworks anyway.
And then, Mayor, the times, are you... Are you talking about the sale or the use?
The sale. Okay. We're done with the use. I think okay. We've got the... Now we're talking about the sale. Yeah.
Mayor, I would like to read the language here just to make sure we're clear, because since no other city is doing it, we may choose to adopt some additional restrictions on the sale. I want to make sure the council is aware of the language. It says the sale and use of permissible consumer fireworks are of a statewide concern. So the state is saying we are preempting the field. The regulation of permissible consumer fireworks pursuant to this article and their use is not subject to further regulation by a governing body, except that a incorporated city or town may regulate the use of permissible consumer fireworks within its corporate limits. And then it goes on. It then expressly allows cities and towns to prohibit use and sale of illegal fireworks. So there is no express authority for the council to limit the sale. So
by time and place?
There's just no reference
whatsoever. That there's
whatsoever.
No express prohibition. How do you define limit?
That's right.
Still allow sales on the periods that they're doing.
That's right, Mayor. I just wanted to make sure you knew what it expressly allowed us to do and what it didn't reference at all.
But you would agree that there is room for creative interpretation?
We could creatively interpret the statute.
Okay.
Now that we've said that on record.
Well, no, I think that's a given. Not even creative interpretation. Dina.
When you said booths, are you referring to like booths inside a Costco where it's an event, or are you talking about the side of the road?
I'm talking about what you see in California and New Mexico, where you have the stands in parking lots and things like that are run by the industry.
Are those run by the industry, or are those run by someone who just went and bought a huge lot of stuff and is making a deal? See, because I always thought it was that and not industry run.
Well, when I say industry, looking at the booths, it appears that there is a cookie-cutter model that is used. There's obviously some kind of regulations or standards that are put up, because it's pretty clear how they set those up. And the industry said that they do this in other areas, that they'll go in and, for example, they'll go with a charity. They'll set up the booth, they'll train, they'll do the standards, and then someone else may actually run it.
I'm thinking that if you actually purchase these in a retail location, that there's more onus on the, there's like more behind it. Like you buy something from the guy in the street, you know, there's no warranty, right? He's gone. But if you buy something from Target and it is defective, then you can go back to Target, right? But when you go back to the guy in the street, he's gone, you know, and you don't know who he was or where he was or anything else. You know, I just think
you're afraid your sparklers may not sparkle.
My sparklers when I light blow up my, you know, whole backyard or something. No, so that, you know, if it's an actual retail facility, there seems to be more credibility and more responsibility behind them. That's what I when you say booth on the street, I just start going, I don't want to buy anything
well,
from
we
a
can,
booth on the
we
street.
Can,
like the shrimp guy. Who buys the shrimp from the shrimp guy? You know, I don't.
You know, first of all, fireworks, even these are made to, there are federal standards from what I understand. These are not. This is a regulated industry for some. There's certain figures, and I have no idea how they patrol that. I think our concern is health and safety, more than commercial transaction. I mean, we have the fire department, the police department up there sitting there.
Except so. when you're selling them on the street, you don't know if they are legally obtained themselves, as opposed to a Target or a Walmart. Target or Walmart's not buying a batch of illegal fireworks from somewhere else that doesn't abide with the federal guidelines. I mean, they wouldn't, because the liability is too huge, but the guy on the side of the street might have got the reject lot and is going to sell them cheaper or make more money.
We can set standards for that. I mean, I threw it out just because I would think that we would, our fire department would have an easier time if we could, once again, set up a thing, and maybe that's opening the door too loud, too wide, I don't know. I mean, I frankly, whether it's a big box or whatever, I'm a little concerned that we have non-trained personnel in handling combustible things that are stacking them on shelves. You have some, you know, a sales clerk or whatever who's certainly trained in selling whatever the store sells. But if they throw on, give the Christmas tree thing. You walk into even a Home Depot and you ask somebody who's an expert in power tools about Christmas trees, I don't know, I have no idea. You know, I can get by with that, but if they're stocking fireworks, that concerns me a little bit. If we can direct it to something where we can actually regulate the safety, maybe that's going too far under the state law. Maybe we can't get that specific. I mean, Debbie, based on what you're looking at, what you read, it seems like we certainly have a limit as to what we can do before then it is interpreted as being we are actually prohibiting or limiting too much the sale of fireworks.
I think that's correct, Mayor.
Okay. So maybe we're overreaching already just with that idea. Do you believe that by defining the stores that it can be sold in, that you know, is that overreaching?
Let me ask Alfred that, because he's been more involved in...
I mean, based on the ordinance, it almost seems like it's a free-for-all out there.
Correct, Mayor. We felt comfortable based on our discussions with Gordon Sheffield and ours that we could limit it again to certain areas, certain store types, C2, C3 zoning. When we started getting a little bit more comfortable as we started going limiting the times of sale, things of that nature, I think then we're going to run afoul of the state law. But I think putting it in certain locations, big box retailers, which I think is what the fire department is advocating, we feel comfortable that we could survive that challenge.
Councilman Summers?
Curiosity, how does what you would propose fit with the National Fire Protection Association standards on fireworks displays? What's in that standard that might be used to limit this to some semblance of sanity, if at all?
Mayor, Councilman Summers, I don't have that NFPA standard in front of me. I know staff, we have looked over that several times in the last several weeks, but I don't remember the exact details on that. But it does, as you state, outline, has the standard itself dictates how they're stored, how much of a certain type you can have and all that. So there are specific regulations on there, which again is, it's already predetermined and set up, and we felt any one of these retailers could take this information and be trained very easily on how to set up a display and how to properly store these.
But that standard regulates, if adopted, that standard regulates then the quantity, how it's displayed, how much can be stored on site.
Correct.
What does it do with the tents and temporary facilities? How does it impact those?
I don't remember the exact details, but I do vaguely remember there are standards and details for those as well.
Let me ask you just a hypothetical question, because you talk about large retail. Aren't you really saying any building with a certain type of fire suppression system?
Yes.
I mean, because I think you might get Walgreens in here that says, wait a second, we have a fire suppression system that's the same as Home Depot. Why can't we sell them?
Well, they probably don't. Though.
Well, I mean, but let's assume they did. So isn't it based on the fire? Come on, Council Member.
No, I mean, if they don't.
But Council Member, it doesn't matter what the store, what the name is on front of the store. We're not going to regulate based on who's on the store. We're going to regulate
based on the system.
What kind of system? If they have the system, they can do it. If they don't have it, they don't. So it's
that's
a self,
fine. There you question. Go. That's how you
that's
go.
What I said. That's what I said.
That's not how I said it.
Yeah.
that was our recommendation, Mayor, yes.
Now, let me ask you hypothetical. Would you rather have combustible items stored inside a building, even with a fire system? And I'm not arguing something, I'm asking you, or a preference where they'd be isolated out front in a separate area? I mean, and maybe that's an unfair question to ask you. Are both of them? I know you'd prefer neither one of them, because I'm trying to get away from this year-round having to monitor highly combustible items inside any store. I mean, that concerns me.
It's a concern to us as well, Mayor. Again, our thought process behind was that these type of occupancies have the built-in systems. They already have hazardous chemicals in there.
Okay.
They store chlorine and pool acids and different things like that. So their system is designed around an inherent hazard already, which means if there is a fire there, our firefighters have a little bit of a head start because of the systems that they have, a little bit more protection. We thought we have another potentially hazard material that's going to be stored in there. We'd like to have it in the occupancies that are already designed and built for other type of hazards.
All right. Okay. What's the consensus on the direction? Do we try some sort of restriction? Allow sales at certain times in certain places, or do we just follow the thing? Vice Mayor.
Well, if we were a city out by ourselves, it would be one thing, but where we're in the valley here, 4 million people in Maricopa County, if we restrict, all they'll do is drive to the neighboring town and pick up what they need. Our biggest challenge is the use and how it's used and the responsibility of people using it. Trying to restrict the sales, I can see the logic behind every approach we take. Bottom line is, if people want to get it, they're going to get it, and they're going to do it within a few minutes, whether it's in Mesa or Tempe or Scottsdale or clear into Phoenix. They're going to get them because the state has preempted us. They put us in this position. So I don't know how much of a burden we want to place on our personnel to try and regulate and find where these are all being sold and trying to track and make sure everything is safe, because it's going to be an overwhelming challenge regardless of what we do. So I'm having a hard time nitpicking it at how we regulate, because the people that want to get them are going to get them anyway. They get them now. It's just going to be a lot easier. Instead of going to Mexico or another state, they're going to go somewhere in the valley and get them, period. So this whole discussion is just frustrating that we've been put in this position in the first place.
So am I hearing that we're sort of spitting into the wind?
Pretty close.
Okay. Any other thoughts?
Well, I think we're going to make an attempt at edit it all, then put it in a place that has a qualified fire suppression. Any business that has a qualified fire suppression system that can handle it, fine. That way you don't have to define zoning category. You define it more on their ability to deal with a problem.
Deal with the issue.
Then you are a certain zoning category. So it's more the building than it is the zoning category.
Okay. Okay with that.
Would you ever allow what I would call controlled vendors is negative. But for example, if you had an industry come up and want to set up a controlled, and I don't know what those standards are, but I'm sure there are some. Would you ever allow those in certain situations?
I grew up in California, and we had those. It was a tradition. Every 2 weeks before 4th of July, every year, they set these plywood boxes up, and Boy Scout troops and everybody else would sell fireworks out of them. And, you know, they're not the most attractive thing. They end up on a vacant lot, and people are pulling in and out of them. And I think it's kind of a nuisance more than it is, but you know, is it that I don't know how what the value is as a fundraising tool to some of these organizations. So
according to the industry, it's very valuable, but I don't know. That's just what they say. Councilmember Higgins?
I think I would rather see it kept in what Councilmember Richmond just said, an area that has the correct fire suppression, which would not typically say the side of the street, because they're not going to have fire suppression systems on a temporary pop-up tent with storage, I'm guessing, unless they have a fire truck parked right next to them. So that's where I'd go back to. I would say if you have this fire suppression system of what you recommended, that would be it.
And so, it certainly is a place to start.
Yeah.
I mean, we can always expand it. Okay. Is that okay with everyone then? Is that the sense? Councilman Fenter? You sure?
I'm just thinking through the logic. You know, when fire suppression systems are designed to protect buildings who house people. So if you have a
say, out in the parking lot of Home Depot, a fenced-in area, and you have a tent, and these folks, you know, not the most attractive thing, but we do it for Christmas trees and others. You're not protecting a building. You know, if you have adequate ingress, egress, yet you have fire extinguishers, you don't have anything to destroy. You know, building isn't lost, and people are able to get away quickly, and it's a surround and drown kind of deal if it were to get out of hand. I haven't heard of any of these things just spontaneously blowing up or anything. So, you know, just looking at the logic of it, I'm not here to be a proponent for the industry at all. I don't even want to be near that position. But, you know, logic and reasoning, you know, there's some thought process there. So,
and I guess that's what I was thinking is, wouldn't we want to isolate the activity? But Councilmember Summers.
No, I was actually wondering that same question myself. The thought being, if these things are going to catch fire, do you want it in the Home Depot or out in the parking lot? In the Home Depot creates a problem. Out in the parking lot, at least, then you just take a broom and sweep it up. And big broom, really big broom.
What if we explored the idea of if there are cells year-round, which is what I'm hearing that we almost have to have, then it has to be in these fire suppression things, because you're not going to have a standout that year round. But in the area, in the times of high use, which would be the two times a year, that we maybe explore what other places do to isolate that. I'm just trying to get a compromise here.
For a limited time.
It's open the week before 4th of July. Or, you know, the week before, the 2 days before, whatever, New Year's?
The only problem, my concern is, you know, those guys, are they licensed with the city? Do they come in for a license?
We have regulations. You have to have fire extinguishers. You have to have things like that. You have to have, Christmas trees. You'd have to have a permit.
And you would know that they're a legal entity and they bought their fireworks from a legal federally... Well, guidelines. You know what I'm saying?
We don't do that with any other business, though.
Well, but not any other business. We're talking explosives again, right? We're talking things that go boom, that light up. Okay. So it's not like a fire. It's not boom. Sorry. I got to stop saying boom.
Stay away from those technical terms.
So the whole... Yes.
Mr. Smith.
Mayor, Councilmember Gates, there's no separate licensing requirement that the business will have to get in order to sell fireworks. So as long as they're a viable business...
Under the current... But we could put that in the ordinance. Remember, regardless of what current ordinance is... We're talking about introducing an ordinance, and the license would be strictly based on health and safety issues.
Well, Mayor, we can certainly explore that. I guess that gets back to what Debbie was saying, that, you know, the further out that we reach from restricting sale, we may run into a problem there. But
I don't think we're restricting the sale. As long as someone meets our health and safety standards, they can sell it. But I think we have.
Can we look at that?
Why don't you look at that? And then I agree with Councilman Fenter that if we maybe can isolate the high volume times, we actually are creating a more safe, potentially more safe situation.
If I could offer, you know, in fire, it's been a long time since I looked at the technical. There's a reason why, you know, these huge lots of Christmas trees are outside, is because if you put them inside, they will overwhelm the system. The systems can never be designed to take a fire load like that. I mean, usually your retail B2 kind of thing. So there's partly a reason, and I think if we get it down to a time frame, if you fill two times a year, start filling an occupancy full of fireworks, I don't ever think that the calculation or the system would ever be approved to cover that. So that's, I think, a reason.
The normal day-to-day
right.
use,
even a
yes.
Home Depot, or I mean, you're looking at a
why don't you look at that
explosives
yeah.
factory
Mayor,
kind of thing.
I'd also point out that the statute specifically says that the state fire marshal shall adopt rules for retail sales of fireworks. So
my guess,
maybe we can look to see if they've already adopted those rules.
Okay.
May address the council.
Why don't you look that way, and let's look at restricting sales to year-round for. Where they're qualified or whatever you want to define as the fire suppression system that's sufficient to deal with the, what we would call the casual sales, you know, birthdays and things like that. Now then, on the two areas of the year that you know you're going to have, like Alex talked about, the stack to the ceiling, I'm not sure we want those inside a store, but maybe look at ways we can isolate those and allow those to go outside.
Mayor,
based on certain standards.
We can certainly do that.
We do for food.
What we're trying to accomplish out here, and I think we're kind of reaching a compromise, and we assume that the sales would happen year-round. Yeah. From the fire department from our people going in these buildings. We didn't want them in every retail business in the city.
Gotcha.
Because it's just unsafe for our firefighters. However, having them at certain locations and then allowing, let's just say, tent sales for no better word right now, at certain times of the year, does seem to be a practical solution.
Well, I think that's where the market will take over, too. I think if you allow tent sales or stand sales in certain areas at certain times, that's where people are going to go. And so that would be a disincentive for the casual store to ramp up and overload the system, because in many ways we've isolated the sales just like we're trying to isolate the use. Is that something we can at least staff can have guidance and we come back with an ordinance we can decide at that time? Hey, thank you. I know we spent a lot of time on this, but this was important to go through this kind of discussion. Yeah.
Okay.
You guys feel comfortable with the direction we've given?
The only thing I guess I need to make sure, or maybe I just missed it, is we're not restricting the time of use, or are we?
No, we're not.
No, we're not. Okay. Place. And I think that stands with the casual.
So, but then the designated areas, though, really are
event-oriented.
Related to the New Year's Eve and the 4th of July.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to. The reality is that people aren't going to go, most people aren't going to go out in the middle of March, even for a birthday, and shoot off a fountain. They are going to use sparklers. But they're going to go out on New Year's Eve and 4th of July, because that's just when people think of using fireworks. And so the idea is to at least manage those times. Am I stating that correct? I can tell everyone's just really tired of this subject, but.
Yeah, let's look at it when we get into the ordinance.
Okay.
We can put in a restriction.
Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it. Look forward to what comes back. Item 2B here, presentation, discuss, provide direction on advertising at transit facilities. Mr. James, I'm assuming this is you.
I'm not sure.
Yes, good morning, Mayor and Council. I'm here this morning with Julie Howard, our transit coordinator, and Gordon Sheffield, our zoning administrator, to give you an update on transit advertising. As you may recall, about a year ago, we got direction from the council to look into this. We did some research, a little bit of research. We went to the Community and Neighborhood Committee, got some more directed insight, and we're back to give you an update as well as seek you your nod to move forward with this initiative. So with that, I'll just hand it over to Julie Howard to go through a few slides on the advertising, and then Gordon will hit a few points on the sign ordinance.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. Some of the main objectives for the proposed program are to provide a better customer experience for transit users in Mesa. This would be by providing more shelters, shade, and comfort for our riders, including benches to sit on. The other main objective is to generate savings and added revenues by privatizing the operations and maintenance costs of our transit shelters. In looking at other programs, we have come to some conclusions. Transit shelter advertising is a standard practice in several other cities. We've also seen that there is a good need to establish very clear advertising standards and restrictions. The city would provide stop locations and shelter pads, and the advertising contractors would actually supply the shelter, the amenities like benches, trash cans, bike loops. They would also provide the shelter cleaning, and they would seek the advertisers for the ads, and they would also provide the revenues. Peer cities that have transit advertising are City of Phoenix, the City of Tucson, and the City of Chandler. Currently, Mesa's facilities, we have a little over 200 existing shelters. We have approximately 800 bus stops throughout the city. The annual O&M, and this is sort of an average, this is based on about twice a week, is about $780 a year per shelter. the total annual operations and maintenance that the city provides is $215,000. With that, I'd like to introduce Gordon to talk about the sign ordinance.
Mayor, Council, the current sign ordinance prohibits off-site advertising. And so as a result of that, it would prohibit the transit shelters from advertising anything that didn't specifically relate to the transit shelter itself. So if they wanted to advertise a Suns game or Diamondsback games or, you know, any kind of advertising would take place off that particular location, it would be considered illegal. There are some recent Ninth Circuit Court rulings that have come into play that would possibly allow for exceptions to be made to those, to that particular law. It does require a revision to the sign ordinance, or any revision to the sign ordinance as part of the zoning code would be required to go to the Planning and Zoning Board first and then come back to council for adoption. Just real quickly, the background on this is the, in 1986, the Mesa Council prohibited new billboards. This was a blanket prohibition. It prohibited all off-site advertising anywhere in the city. We have a significant number of grandfathered billboards from that particular time. But since that time, we've also, because of the nonconforming statutes, removed several of those billboards. In 1991, the council, the industry basically opposed that. It was it went through the different court systems. Finally got appealed up to the Ninth Circuit Court ruling. This was combined with a case. Tucson had done something similar. And the Ninth Circuit Court agreed that the prohibition of off-site signs was considered reasonable. What's happened since then, Los Angeles had a similar prohibition against billboards, but they created an exception for that for transit signs so they could create this advertising stream to try to help support their shelter programs. The industry basically sued on that, saying that, well, if you allow it for transit signs, you should also allow it for us. And the court basically came back and said, no, that was a reasonable exception to that particular rule. So for that reason, we believe that particularly since Arizona is part of the Ninth Circuit, we have that legal precedent to create a similar exception. So we are recommending that before any RFPs are issued, to go forward with this, we do amend the sign ordinance first. Our transit folks would go through and identify things like shelter locations and design the advertising. Just a couple on this, and I kind of wanted to emphasize this a little bit. Because of everything else that's going on with the zoning code update, with all the other ordinances that are kind of in the air that may affect the zoning code, medical marijuana, possibly the fireworks ordinance, a couple of the other things like that, it would be helpful if we could incorporate any modifications, if the council chooses to go that direction, into the zoning code update itself. We have to bring the sign ordinance over as a chapter when we do the entire code. We're not really modifying anything in there, but this is what there's a couple of small modifications we have to make to try to tweak the code, so to speak, to make it fit. This is one of those tweaks that we could incorporate into that, so that as we go through the zoning code update process, we incorporate this change at the same time, so it would go forward basically on that same timetable. The council, the P&Z board, will be looking at probably sometime in February. Council will be looking at this at possible adoption in March or April.
Okay.
So,
actually, go back one slide.
Yeah.
You want to hit it real quick.
So, like Gordon said, to move forward with the program, we would have to revise the sign ordinance. Some of the other things that we would have to do is to identify future shelter locations. We'd like to design advertising shelters with lighted ad panels and have three different sizes so that they can fit in various locations. And the design of these would include an effort involving public input. And then we would bring back the RFP back to council for review and discussion.
Okay, Councilmember Higgins?
Quick question. The lighted panels, would that take place for the lighting in the shelter? Or what's the reason for the lighted ad panels? Do the other cities have lighted ad panels?
Well, we're really looking at a kind of a two-prong approach where we to start the program and get it running, we would allow the standard panels just to be put on existing shelters, and they most likely would not be lighted. But as we move forward and implement new shelters, there is an opportunity to have lighted panels in our shelters.
And why would we want that?
I think it provides better visibility to the advertising.
And why? But
and
if advertisers are willing to put advertising on non-lighted, why would we want to go ahead and? Because it never dawned on me that you would want to light these 24/7.
Right. If the council doesn't want that, that's fine. It's sure. Obviously, yeah. if the idea is to give an opportunity for additional revenue generation, yeah, then that, that'd
money.
Be it.
You would
make
more money.
I've even seen
with the
where they have the rolling ads that are lighted.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
There's more. You would make more money off a lighted panel.
Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a policy decision that you can make.
And it would. And again, we would look at the areas which we're recommending the lighted that they would fit in the
like a commercial.
I think in Phoenix, was it Phoenix who went through this just recently, and they only allow the lighted in commercial areas. Mm-hmm. They do not allow them in on streets where there's residences. It was Phoenix or Chandler or somebody that just went through this.
Yeah.
And that's the compromise they had. So you see them like along Central and Camelback between Central and like 24th or 32nd. And then after that, you don't see them because they're more in residential areas. They don't allow lighted. Dave?
How do you meter the power that's used? And who pays for the power that's used for that?
Good question.
That's something that we can work out in our RFP. We haven't, got into that level of detail at this time. That's something we can work out. If there's a concern that we're not paying for that, we can look at that.
But it all comes down into what net means
on
the lease, right?
Yeah.
Be interesting to see what the other cities do for those. Yeah. And luckily, I think we do have some precedence. Others have sort of ease the way for us. We can look at what they had to go through. Kyle?
Okay. Early on in the presentation, you mentioned that we would provide the pad and then let them build the shelter and do the advertising and such. Now, we have over 800 bus stops, but the majority of those stops are basically just a sign at the side of the road. We do not have any space that has been acquired right of way to put those shelters on. So the burden of doing that, if this program takes off, the burden of that to acquire that right-of-way falls on the city, obviously.
That is correct. Yes.
And that's something we're going to have to manage because that could be very significant if the program takes off. Really? The need for the shelters is tremendous, but acquiring and putting the pad down is the first cost that's going to be significant.
No, but Mayor and Council, and that's how these programs, at least my past experience has been, you look at this like a five-year contract or a period of time, you put all those costs in so that what you're getting from the contract for advertising
pays for all that.
The idea is
you up front it, but you get it back.
You're doing this for the purpose of, one, for the benefit to the city is to defer this maintenance cost, and if there's additional shelters, additional advertising opportunities, the industry's paying for those.
So really what it boils down to, even though there might be upfront cost to us, is we get shelters in places where we don't have them, where there is a definite need.
We're not going to get them otherwise. We don't have the money to do it.
But yet it would allow the industry to
provide the opportunity to decide where the areas are that makes sense. It's a combination of where we need a shelter and where they think it will happen.
Where they think they'll get their best bang for the buck, and we work it out. But in the full length of the program, we come out ahead because we have the shelters and we recoup all of our costs.
We don't need, exactly.
And I think that's what Phoenix was dealing with, because the advertisers, you get down Camelback and Indian School, those places where there's high traffic counts, but it's pure residential. Obviously, the industry would love to put shelters and lighted signs there, but Phoenix said, no, we're going to limit that. So the city has the ultimate control.
That's why we just need the direction of council to at least move forward developing this ordinance. So then we'll come back.
As a concept, you're looking for our direction and approval. As a concept, it's worth going to the next step.
Right. And so obviously we have to get the zoning in place too.
Right.
So we can even contemplate the ordinance.
Right. But that's all part of the process.
Right. Absolutely.
Vice Mayor?
So we're talking about getting started to get the zoning in place,
right.
get the RFP out. But then we open a whole new can of worms in that. So what limit can we restrict advertising? Because there's some things you wouldn't want there. So we need to find out what we can and can't limit.
And as the mayor said, a lot of other cities have gone through this, so we can piggyback on that.
And I know Phoenix just has had some over the last years has learned, and I would love to learn from their experiences
because
they've gone through that. Yeah.
Okay.
Councilman Richens?
I think we can capitalize maybe on an opportunity here, but it'd be a good, this would be a good thing to get our design review board involved in a little bit to help make sure that the quality of the design is important, and maybe even our arts and culture advisory board, because there's opportunities to really enhance the city with certain shelters instead of just having this, you know, homogeny of shelters that end up the same all around. There might be opportunities to celebrate parts of the city in their context, and, you know, who knows? So just want to throw that out.
Councilmember Summers?
I seem to recall that we visited this issue maybe a year or two ago.
Oh, it's been more, and we were told to have conformity, and all our bus shelters all look the same.
Yeah.
So we can shift.
We were told to have conformity in that. Well, actually, there's a when you buy them all the same,
yeah,
there's a
right.
cost savings rate. But it seems to me that this issue came up maybe a year or two ago. We rejected it for the idea of visual clutter. What's different?
I don't think it's come up with this.
I don't remember entirely. What's changed out of this one compared to the last one?
No, we gave us direction to go.
Yeah.
Did we say to come back?
Yes.
We're coming back to the same thing. It's just that same.
I think you were the one that made the motion to come back because you were the biggest supporter.
Yeah.
No. At least that's how I remember it.
There is a change.
You weren't before yard.
The proposals before had us doing the shelters. This one is talking about the advertiser installing.
No. Well, or they would pay for us to pay for the cost of doing it. I don't know if they would actually do
or is
it.
Different.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because that is a tweak. Because I don't remember the last.
Yeah. No. It's focusing on who's paying for it, and that would pay for it. You know, I would suspect because it's in the right of way, we'd most likely be building them. I think.
Okay.
And controlling the design and.
Yeah, and I like the idea that Councilman Ridge brought up about, you know, let's get, I don't want to go totally off the thing, but I like the prospect of getting a little creative and designing shelters that maybe fit within the specific area.
So when
and
we bring
like
these
that.
Back, we'll need to visit, because we do have direction as Councilman Summers from a previous body to do things differently. But that's okay.
Yes.
No. We just need to adjust. And, we'll
and I think we're in the mood to do things differently. We just need to make sure what that means.
Okay, fair enough.
And I think the only statement, we did talk about this last year, right? Mm-hmm. And we were moving ahead with the thought that we would look at making sure in residential areas.
Yeah.
That was the only difference.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
but we were moving ahead, and
I
they
think
were good.
We were the ones that had that discussion about signage in residential areas. Yeah, I think and I remember that.
But that was the only.
Gordon,
hasn't
Mr. Sheffield will impart wisdom to us now.
Okay.
Actually, I'm asking questions.
Oh, gee.
Sorry about
Thanks.
That.
Thanks a lot.
No, just for clarification, as we go forward with the sign ordinance, we can write this in such a way that we allow this exception only when adjacent to commercially zoned areas. Or we can allow it to when it's adjacent to commercial or residential or industrial. Or you just have a blanket approval and say you just allow it in the right-of-way.
I think what we're talking about is that we don't mind the idea of allowing it in the right-of-way, but we want to have the ability to create different standards depending on where it is.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's a zoning issue or just a decision about how we make those decisions
right.
before we put the sign.
But I think
I'm trying to clarify how to write the ordinance.
Well, I think the ordinance is to allow the off-site advertising for transit purposes only.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and don't worry about what it's adjacent to.
Well, we will.
But
if you have
to put in the ordinance that it gives us the leeway to design standards
right.
and to differentiate between areas, then include that.
Okay.
But I don't think you need to get to
right.
the specifics.
Because in the world
right
of
now.
Mixed use, it could be both.
That's right.
And
yeah.
you have to make a decision.
So the ordinance itself basically is neutral on that position, and you create the policy after the ordinance.
That's right.
Okay.
I think that's what we're hearing. Okay? Any other questions? Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right.
Next item is the appointment of boards and committees. We have two appointments to fill vacancies. As soon as I get it here. And that's Andrew Call to the Design Review Board and Stephen Sparks to the Human Services Advisory Board. I have a motion from Councilman Rich and second from Councilmember Summers. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Motion carries. Thank you very much. Acknowledge receipts of various boards and committees. We have a motion from the Vice Mayor, a second from Councilmember Fenter. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Motion is carried. Hear reports on meetings and conferences attended. Do we have any reports? Okay, Mr. Brady.
Mayor and Council, today is a day of celebration for Mr. Brian Raines. This is his last day.
Celebration. By the way, while you were gone, we need to report back to you. He did a very adequate job. Is what that's what we determined. He was an adequate fill-in.
Well,
he reached the pinnacle of his career in his last formal official duty. Yeah.
Well, that was great. I'm glad I gave him that opportunity in his last weeks.
It's not you gave him. He seized the opportunity.
Yeah. Great. I just publicly want to say we do have a celebration today at 2:30 at Holcomb Stadium to recognize Brian's...
Brian, how does it feel that they're having a celebration as you're walking out the door?
He's just fine with it.
We're not celebrating your leaving. We're celebrating the years you were here.
That's right.
I just want to make that perfectly clear. Okay.
And I just think it's appropriate to recognize Brian for all his work because he has spent many a time sitting at that table talking to councils over the years and providing insight and direction on a variety of matters. And certainly many times the message hasn't always been easy to deliver, especially in the last 3 or 4 years regarding the finances and budget. At least ever since I've been here anyway, Brian has done it in a very professional way, very honest and forthright, and I think the city of Mesa has absolutely benefited from his service in all his different capacities. And I just publicly want to say how much I appreciate what he's done and what he's done for the city. And recognize him for that today and say thank you very much.
And Brian got a round of applause last time, but I think that after 28 years, you merit a second round of applause. So that's good. And we are going to miss you.
Yes.
So
there is an Audit Finance Committee meeting after this. Also remind everyone that we will have City Hall at the Mall at Superstition Springs this Saturday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. It's in the court area right in front of JCPenney. I think I'm saying that right. And so we look forward to having everybody there. And then...
Isn't Rain's official retirement day November 1st?
Oh, it's end of December.
Yeah. Saturday, and then also this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, we have the annual Dia de los Muertos at the Mesa Arts Center from 10 to 5 p.m., and so we invite everybody to come out for live entertainment and food.
And that sort of fits in. Brian will be there because Day of the Dead there, or retired. It sort of seems to fit with that.
Now, our council meeting on November 1st, we have a special opportunity for the council prior to that meeting. I'm going to ask Carrie Kent to come and talk to the council about an opportunity to take a tour at the library, the main library.
Here. Thank you, Chris. Mayor and council, this Monday on November 1st, we'd like to, the library staff would like to invite the council to an orientation of the Mesa Public Library Career Center. And this center was opened last July, just a few months ago, and it's a collaborative effort with the Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian Community, Goodwill Industries, Maricopa Workforce Connection, Mesa Community College, and of course the Mesa Library. The staff and some of its partners will be there to share with you all the programming efforts that are underway and the success stories that have occurred to date in just its short tenure. So if you can join us, we'll be meeting in the basement level of the main library at 3:30, and refreshments will be served. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor and Council.
Okay. You know, we have some requests to speak during the items from citizens present. And actually, one of them is unique. Mr. Johnson, is that you? We normally don't take testimony from public during study sessions, but you certainly have the opportunity, and Sarah, if you want to say some things related to the fireworks thing, now's the time. We would be more than happy to hear from you. Yeah, come right up there. Please, for the record, state your name and address in that, and you got 3 or 4 minutes if you want to address what we've talked about and maybe add anything to the discussion.
Thank you, council members and mayor. My name is Sarah Sparman. I'm with Williamson Associates. Our office address is 2929 North Central Avenue, Phoenix, Arizona, 85012.
And I'm Ron Johnson. I'm with TNT Fireworks, 2929 East, North Central, sorry.
Just a couple of things that we wanted to bring up. I know we were talking, you had some questions about the standards on the sale of fireworks. The fire marshal is adopting those. It's going through the rule process. Currently, it should be adopted.
State Fire Marshal, right?
But State Fire Marshal, I'm sorry, State Fire Marshal Barger. He believes that those should be ready to go January 1 after going through all of the process. They're pretty easy to adopt as it is just NFP 1124. I'd like to get a copy. It's kind of dry reading, but Chapter 7 deals directly with retail sales and what the requirements are. NFP 1124 was developed by fire professionals from across the nation, cream of the crop. There were some industry involved in it, too, so they're very stringent, probably more stringent than any of your fire codes, and it's specific to fireworks, all permissible consumer fireworks. And I want to make certain that you're aware what's legal in Arizona now is a small portion of what is considered permissible consumer fireworks at the federal level. A couple of other points I wanted to make, just there were two bullet points towards the end of the report that you received regarding your liability that the state fire marshal could come back on if there are any fires. That's statute. It's been statute for I'm not sure how many years. That was the only reason why it was added to the legislation was because we've implemented a $1,000 fine for anybody using fireworks on state land, and we wanted it to go to that wildfire suppression fund. So that's the only reason that piece of statute is in the bill. Do you
just
Ron could probably add a little bit more as to, he's actually with industry, what I know you had some concerns, Councilman Higgins, about who's going to be on the side of the road selling, and is it more safe to be in a building? So, and Ron can speak to that.
In relation to that, there are rogue, what we'll call rogue fireworks salespeople that run in and out of the gamut of the cities, the street corners, things like that, and that is not a benefit to you. That is not a benefit to us as well. They don't operate under the same regulations that we operate under, specifically manufacturing. They typically acquire illegal, not only illegal per state statute, but illegal from the standpoint of the manufacturing of the products as well. Even down to the burn rate of a wick, you know, we've got certain regulated burn rates of a wick so that, you know, that it creates additional layers of safety, which they don't. And you'll see instances where you refer to of fires and injuries and things like that. The majority, and I'll back it up with the correct percentages, I'm not quite sure at this point, but the majority of those incidences are due to illegal fireworks, things that have not been legalized. Bottle rockets landing on Cedar Shake roofs. We don't have that. That's not legal in Arizona, and that's not what we're proposing either. Explosives due to the non-conforming manufacturing of the products itself. So we are very concerned as well as you are regarding the safety. This is not a fly-by-night operation. Councilmember Richens, you've been in California and you've seen those, and you as well, Mr. Mayor, that it's been 50 years in California that they've been doing this type of operation. And so the same regulations for sale and use there are what we're proposing here. We're not trying to come in, fly in, fly out, make a buck and leave. We really have been, it's been 20 years with getting the adoption of the use, and the use being now with what you refer to as the safe and sane, the ground-based, non-flying, non-explosive sparkler fountains that has been adopted. And you're right, there's no regulation of stupidity. That was very well put.
That was a legal term, by the way, remember. And that and boom-boom. Those two things, we didn't want to go over people's head with the legalese on that.
And just for your information, the way that TNT operates and the way that the three manufacturers operate, we set up contracts with the Walmarts, the Safeways, the Fry's. We deliver the materials. We set it up. If they need a reorder, we bring the reorder to the facility and implement it in the buildings. As for outside, the contracts also consist of outside sales on their parking lots. If they own the property, most of them do own the property. So these are negotiated business contracts that we work out with them ahead of time. It's not fly by night, oh, we're just going to pop up a tent. There are some of those. Luckily, we also have a good number of staff that will be in the state during times that we're selling, high times like 4th of July and New Year's. So we will be patrolling as well. Like Ron said, those rogue sailors are of no benefit to us because if their product does set off a fire, you guys are going to be sitting here, all right, we're done, we're going to ban this completely. So we will be working with the fire and police. Our staff is very well trained in the setup, the regulations for setup, tent, and in retail. And we will be able to identify, probably better so than some of your fire coming these next couple of seasons.
Great. If you could make sure you connect with staff, and because I think you can add a lot of insight as we try and navigate this right. And somewhat confusing territory.
One other thing as well is as you referenced, we do the majority, 95%+ of our work is done with nonprofits in all the you know, state, cities, municipalities, schools, churches. Ball teams, Teen Challenge, I know we've talked to them. We've got several nonprofits, 501c3s that we operate with. We're in negotiation right now with a space in Phoenix to be able to set up our a display, a tent, if you will, to bring the groups in. And every group that has a contract with us to sell will be trained how to stack. We'll come in, we'll supply. If they run low, we supply, we bring it to them. Sales, legalities, everything that comes that comes with the sale of the products in the tents. In addition, they are required to have fire extinguishers in the tents. And the way that we've designed the setup of them as well, there is no cul-de-sacs. So if there's ever any potential safety issues, there's multiple exits, and none of them create issues where anyone can get caught. Mm-hmm. So we've really, again, with 50 years of doing this, there's a lot of history behind it. A lot of the kinks have been worked out, and we'd love to sit down and have this opportunity to be able to sit with you.
Okay. Appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
Look forward
Thank
to
you.
Working with you. Thank you. We now have two individuals who would like to also speak, Mr. Richard Thompson and Brad Stratton. Are you still here? Yeah. Now, Mr. Stratton and Mr. Thompson, since this was not on the agenda, and I understand you tried to get on, but it was not on the agenda, we can't respond to what you're saying because this is unlike the other one, which was on the agenda. Therefore, we could talk back and forth because this is truly an item from Citizen Present. You can give your presentation, and we can't respond to it. So, okay?
I understand.
So go right ahead. Please name and address in 3 minutes.
Brad Stratton, 3265 East Bluebird Drive in Gilbert. I recognize the council is nearly as sick of the towing services contract as I am, but I beg your attention for another 3 minutes. Thompson Diversified protested the All-City Award 4 separate times. Purchasing denied the All-City Award was wrong all 4 times. Thompson appealed all 4 of these decisions to the city manager. Again, Mesa denied in each instance that the All-City Award was improper. Thompson presented the biased and prejudicial nature of the city's scoring chart and begged the council to reject the egregious award. The council rejected the bogus nature of the recommendation and voted 4-2 to give them a contract. Mesa has now come late to the party and announced its intent to rescind the award. Since Mesa acknowledges the All-City Award was never earned, why not announce who did earn the contract? Here's what we all agree on. Mesa has said that the scoring formula can be used with a zero. Mesa has said that it is acceptable to develop a replacement chart to solve the problem. Mayor Smith and Councilwoman Higgins have each made public statements advocating for proportional and relative scoring, which coincidentally was guaranteed by the city's excellent RFP. And we can all agree that any scoring should comply with the letter and spirit of the RFP. With these truths stated, I present you with the proportionate, relative, and accurate scoring charts. These scoring charts, which comply in every way to the RFP, have perfect fidelity of comparison between all contractors. These charts don't corruptly give 15 points to All City for a $30 an hour bid and 20 points to Thompson for a 1 cent bid. They award points exactly the way the city RFP promised they would. They follow the law, they follow the rules, they are accurate to within a single dime. They are the black and white truth. They show what we have known for nearly 4 months. The manufactured award Mesa gave All City Towing belonged rightfully to Thompson Diversified. There are no two ways about it. It's black and white, and anyone who questions that these charts are RFP compliant, completely fair, and the embodiment of justice has an agenda that isn't congruent with ethical government. What should the council do with this knowledge? First, the council should acknowledge Thompson followed every single rule in the RFP. and the RFP rewarded them with a victorious score. Finally, Mesa should execute contracts with Thompson, ending all litigation and defy any party to bring legal action. Sunshine is the best disinfectant. An open and transparent award Monday night, which is completely compliant with the RFP, the city charter, and basic ethics, will be immune from any further legal challenges. I beg the council to review these words as you enter executive session. My attorney keeps admonishing me to worry less about the politics of this situation. He's forever reminding me that justice is supposed to be blind. Please take action that convinces me justice isn't deaf as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Thompson?
Good morning. Mr. Mayor, members of the council, my name is Richard Thompson. I am the owner of Thompson Diversified. My address there is 661 West Broadway, Mesa, Arizona, 85210. I would like to take this opportunity to state that I am proud of trying to give the citizens of Mesa the best possible price and service for the towing contract. Unfortunately, for this gesture, I have been accused twice by the city's legal counsel and once by purchasing of attempting to game the system. I refuse to apologize for being astute enough to understand that proportionate formula provided and required by the city's own RFP. I would argue that getting the best price for the towing was an original intent of the RFP. Otherwise, the lowest bid portion of the scoring would not have been used in the city's formula in the first place. I would argue that for the last 10 years in Scottsdale, 1 cent was bid and accepted. And for the last 5 years, I have been operating on a zero bid without any accusation of gaming the system. I tried to give the best price using the formula the city provided in the RFP. There was no gaming the system. Remember, these were sealed bids. We had to assume that in this competitive field, our competition would bid as aggressively as we did, since they have done so in the past. That being said, I did have the best price for the score for price score for the citizens of Mesa. I also have the best ETAs and the lowest customer complaints. And we have responded to more Mesa police towing calls than any other considered contractor over the last 5 years. This was all figured using the records request we submitted to the city. Please verify these facts for yourselves. The original intent of this RFP was to get the best qualified vendor at the best price. And there is no question I was a winner of this award. If the city uses the RFP compliant, precisely proportionate, and legally invincible charts provided today to evaluate the proposals, it will restore the proportionate scoring that the RFP originally guaranteed and scores all contractors fairly. It scores all bids proportionately and without bias to any one vendor. It will leave the righteous city of Mesa immune to successful legal contest from anyone, including my own firm. It will restore the transparency to the bid process, and it will give the two rightful winners the award they deserved. For 4 months, the city has claimed it has done nothing wrong. This raises another contradiction. If nothing was done wrong, then why the need for an award retraction or subsequent rebid? Let's agree that the evaluation was not handled right and correct that problem. Let's move forward with the original intent of the RFP to award it using proportionate scoring. The proportionate scoring chart provided here today will result in all contractors being objectively evaluated in a manner completely proportionate to each other in compliance with the RFP and will thoroughly eliminate any prospect of successful litigation by any party. Remember, proportionality was the original requirement of the RFP, and the lack of it is the foundation of our protest. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Appreciate it. Okay. Next item on the agenda is to move into a quick executive session after a short break. We have a motion.
It's up to you.
Yeah, it's up to you.
We're going to move in. We have a motion to move in. A second from Councilman Richens. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We're now in executive session. Thank you very much.